also PhD at Laura from Berkeley. Kitty is doing her PhD on fall. But today she's telling us about something with big phenolics, about bubble virginosis.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Let me adjust this. Is that better? Okay, so I'll be telling you about bubble baryogenesis. It's a project I worked with Cliff, who is now at Caltech, and Alex Zollin, who is a postdoc with us at Berkeley. So, as we all know, we need new physics to explain the dynamical origin of the observed baryon asymmetry of the universe. Here, eta is defined as the baryon number density over the co-moving entropy. It's been measured to be of order 10 to the minus 10. Sakharov conditions tell us that if we want to dynamically generate this asymmetry without imposing initial conditions, we need to meet certain criteria. So obviously, you need baryon number violation. You need CP violation so that you don't produce the conjugate interactions with the same rate. And you need a departure from thermal equilibrium. There have been many, many proposed mechanisms to do this, electroweak, gut, aplec-dyne. I won't even go through the long list of citations here. What I'll tell you about is a new proposal in which you imagine a complex scalar field. It undergoes a percolating first-order phase transition. So in other words, you're going to have a tunneling event across a potential baryon that's going to have explicit B and CP violating terms. This tunneling event will result in bubble nucleations, and the bubbles will carry an asymmetry in their walls. So as the bubbles will nucleate, they'll expand throughout space. This will spread the asymmetry, and eventually it will migrate to the standard model. So the outline of this talk will be, first, I'll give you an introduction to our mechanism. So I'll try to convince you why this even works, why this is even a good way to generate baryons. Then I'll go over some kind of model-independent statements that you can make about the generic size of the asymmetry, what the various effects are from the collisions of the bubbles. Do we have to worry about washing out the asymmetry after the collisions? Then I'll go over a very, very simple example toy model. And finally, I'll discuss some potential signals, future directions, and give you an example of a more realistic embedding of this mechanism in a theory like the MNSSM. Okay. So how do we get baryons from scalar fields? So imagine you have a complex scalar field. I can parameterize that in terms of a radial and angular field. There's associated conserved current associated with U1 rephasings. And the associated charge density is just given by R squared theta dot. So this means that if I want to generate an asymmetry, I have to have a quote-unquote angular momentum in field space. So that means that the field needs to be displaced from the origin in field space. And you need to give it some kind of angular velocity, which can be done, for instance, by putting explicit theta-dependent b-violating terms in your potential. OK, so you imagine that today we live in a b-symmetric vacua. You can't have too much baryon number violating interactions. And you imagine that in the early universe, the field is displaced somewhere. It's in some other region of the potential where you can have baryon violation. And as the universe evolves, the field is going to evolve through the potential down to the origin. And as it does so, it's going to pick up an asymmetry. So if this evolution is classical, so in other words, if the transition between the vacua, the phase transition, is second order or higher, the field is just going to roll through the potential. And this is essentially the aplec-dyne mechanism. So you just have a rolling trajectory through field space, and this generates a non-zero baryon asymmetry.
So the asymmetry comes from different directions of the spiral. I mean, if I want to generate,
it's the opposite direction. Yes, exactly. Yes. So yes, and this will be important. So this has been greatly studied, and in the phenomenology of this has been worked out, especially by Lucy Randall, Scott Thomas, Michael Dine papers, and So our proposal is to consider what happens if there isn't a classically allowed trajectory. So in other words, a first order phase transition. So in this case, the field tunnels from the baryon violating vacua to the symmetric vacua via bubble nucleation event. And Coleman tells us how to solve for the instanton solution, which gives us the most likely bubble to nucleate, and tells us what the decay rate, which is proportional to e to the minus the Euclidean action. So just to review how to do this, so in other words, review the overshoot undershoot argument for the case of a real scalar field. So Coleman tells us that most likely bubble to nucleate will have SO4 symmetry. So you can rewrite the equations of motion in terms of a Euclidean variable. And then what you do is you solve a mechanical analog problem where you have a ball rolling in an inverted potential. It has some position phi and some time rho. And what you look for is you look for solutions to the equations of motion with boundary condition, with initial conditions such that you start the field off from some point at from initial at zero velocity at zero time, and you reach the top of the hill an infinite time later. And the way you do this numerically is you pick some point along the potential and you perturb above and below it. So if you're too high, you have too much energy, you roll, you overshoot, and you end up down here. You're too low, and you become stuck in the valley. So you can do that numerically, and you get a field profile, which you can then continue back into Minkowski space, into X and T. And what this corresponds to is the nucleation of bubbles of true vacua in a background of false vacua. So what I've plotted here is the field profile of the walls interpolating between the false vacua and the true vacua if I equals zero, and it expands outward quickly. So what we have is not a real scalar field, but a complex scalar field. So in other words, we have to do this, but for two fields. So the end result is two profiles, one for R and one for theta. Here I've chosen a potential that has this explicit B and CP violation so that the profile for theta isn't flat, and you actually have a wall in the theta direction interpolating between different vacua. And when you look at the instanton trajectory, which is this red curve here, you see that it does in fact curve. And here I've superimposed it on a contour plot of this toy potential, which I've chosen for this example. So in an exact analog to Affleck-Dine, you expect to generate a baryon asymmetry whenever you see that the instanton solution arcs in field space.
Sorry, yeah, just a silly technical question. When you have a two-dimensional dimension or higher dimensional, then the overshooting method is pretty bad.
It's hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a numerical, it's numerically much more difficult.
And that somehow fits.
Yes.
Because people need to modify the dimensional.
A modified, I mean.
Instead of using a shooting method,
I mean, the way we did this was like, just, you know, do it for one field, look for that solution, do it for the other field, then go back, perturb the first field until it converged. There's probably much faster ways to do it.
Yeah,
there's
a method in which you can use multi-dimensional things. Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe I should talk to you because we ran into trouble when we went to
more than
two fields. We ran into trouble, so yeah.
Are you familiar with the work of Hubert and Constantine?
What specifically?
Well, they look precisely problem, I think, that involves tunneling the many field space.
Okay, no, I haven't.
Yeah, also in the context of baryogenics, maybe you can look at sort of what sort of techniques they use.
I've used it and I've computed things like five fields.
Okay, that definitely be useful. Okay, but for now, this was enough to show that you do get non-zero baryon asymmetry. And what this looks like in Minkowski space is, if you plot the field profile, is you see that the curving is happening in the walls. So it's the walls of the bubbles that will carry the asymmetry. So it carries the asymmetry. They're going to spread out through space. And the end result of their collisions is going to be a spatially inhomogeneously distributed asymmetry. And I say collisions because for many different reasons, one bubble is not enough. First, for the simple reason that we want eventually the phase transition to complete. We want the entire universe to transit from B violating to B symmetric phase. Secondly, if you don't have a bubble collision, then the asymmetry runs off to infinity. So by this, I mean you nucleate a bubble, but you're never really in causal contact with the wall, so you don't actually see the asymmetry. So you need these bubbles to collide. You need a first order percolating phase transition. And this is going to motivate the choice of the effective potential. It's going to motivate the time evolution of the effective potential. So I'm going to choose an effective potential that at early times is going to have a deep global minima that's b-violating. As time goes on, this minima will be lifted. It will become metal stable. Tunneling will become possible, and percolation is going to occur sometime in that regime. And eventually, at late times, the phase transition is going to become second order or higher, and the motion is just classical. So there's several different ways you can generate such a potential, and they correspond to different cosmological histories. So first, you can imagine having the percolating phase transition happen after reheating. So you're going to have the scalar baryon couple to the Big Bang plasma. It's going to have temperature-dependent thermal effects, which are going to change the couplings of the potential, very similar to what they do in electroweak baryogenesis. The problem here is, of course, once you start coupling things to the plasma, you have a lot of thermal washout effects to worry about. And at this level, we don't want to deal with that. So what we're going to consider is a different regime where percolation occurs before reheating. And what I mean by this is inflation is finished, so the inflaton is now oscillating about its minimum. It's a matter-dominated era, but it hasn't decayed yet to standard model particles. And this is the same regime that they live in for afflux dyeing. So this is what we'll focus on. And now let me tell you some general statements about the mechanism. So just a summary of the requirements I've imposed. I want to get the right asymmetry. I want the B and CP violating terms in the potential to arc the instanton in such a way as to accommodate 10 to the minus 10 asymmetry. I want percolation. The potential must admit the first order phase transition so that the universe is fully converted to the B symmetric vacua and the asymmetry doesn't run off to infinity. Any washout effects have to be under control. I already told you I'm not going to worry about thermal washout, but there might be classical washout effects. So you could worry about washing out the asymmetry simply from the field evolving under the classical equation motions, which will now have B and CP violating terms. And finally, the asymmetry has to migrate to the standard model sector. So for instance, you can do that through decays. And here's a little preview of what you will expect the final integrated asymmetry to be like as a function of time. So there'll be different different regimes that contribute to the baryon asymmetry, which I will discuss.
How do you know you're not colliding with bubble with not the baryon number?
Because you're going to also have CP violating. So those bubbles are going to be suppressed in this potential. And I'm just about to discuss that, actually. So by that, I mean I'll discuss how the Sakharov conditions manifest themselves in this mechanism. So if you imagine U1 symmetric and CP conserving potential, right, that's just like a Mexican hat potential. Here, the center is the global minima. This bright band is the barrier, and then the slightly darker band is the local minima that you tunnel from. And of course, in this case, the instanton solution is just going to be radial bounce. So theta dot is zero, and you're not going to generate any baryons. Okay, that's fine. We knew that. Let's add B violating terms. So for instance, I can add something like a mass term and the quartic. And what this does is it's like adding a cosine theta or sine theta dependence, and it just creates peaks and troughs along the basin of the U1 symmetric potential. I would be interested to see them because, as far as I know, nobody has done first order baryogenesis. I mean, they've studied.
Not for this, but the electroweak baryogenesis.
Yes, absolutely.
But that's one to one.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, electroweak baryogenesis has nucleation of bubbles, but in electroweak baryogenesis, they're getting CP violation by scattering off of these bubbles.
Yeah, sure.
For us, baryon asymmetry is carried in the bubbles.
There are also similarly potential in principle, right? So
this potential is not unique at all. And that's
right. So
I'm
asking, has anyone studied the same thing in the 2DW model?
These potentials have been studied, yes.
Have
been studied. And that's part of the, that's a good thing for us because it means that we can hope to do this mechanism in a model like the MSSM, for instance, because we can do this with any potential. We don't need a crazy exotic potential to do it in. So in this example, you can tell that if you start somewhere because of these peaks and troughs, then the instanton solution is going to curve, and you're going to generate Baran asymmetry. However, in this case, you're just as likely to curve in the other direction. So you're going to produce the same amount of baryons and anti-baryons. So this is, to answer your question, is that in this case, you're just as likely to collide with a bubble that carries anti-baryons in its wall. And eventually, after the collisions, it's going to equalize to zero. So what we need...
The model doesn't answer your question. I think there will still be a square root n drift towards one or another. But it's going to be a slower drift towards n side. Even if you have two, you don't necessarily end up with the symmetric state, right? Because you have a square root n drift.
Yeah, but by the time you merge the horizons more and more in these areas, your n becomes huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it will be very small and very slow.
Yeah. However, if you add a CP phase, then you're going to have you're going to spin your potential. You're going to give it some spin, and then the instanton will preferably arc in only one direction, so that the anti-baryons created will be negligible. And then you can treat all your bubbles as carrying a positive baryon asymmetry in the wall. Is that?
So what is the precise term you added for this?
This is a crazy potential. It's an exaggerated potential. It's like e to the theta squared or something. It's just an example numerical result where you can really see the curving. The actual potential in the toy model, I'll show you, just has like you add like mass terms and qubits and stuff like that. I'll motivate that. Okay, so very roughly, you want to ask how much baryons is stored in the walls. So you just integrate over the zero component of the conserved current, so r squared theta dot, and you just make an assumption that the bubbles collide long after nucleation, and they're spherically symmetric bubbles. And what you find is that the integrated baryon asymmetry goes as the surface area, L is some late length scale, times this integral, r squared theta dot, that just depends on the instanton profiles. So that the number density goes as this integral quantity over L. So now you can calculate this numerically, or you can, if you treat the B and CP violating terms as a small perturbation in the potential, you would expect the change in theta to be proportional to that perturbation. And you can parameterize this roughly as epsilon, the dimensionless number characterizing B and CP violation, times the value of R at the false vacuum, which is going to dominate the integral.
So you're assuming that the scalar field is charged on the B, right?
Yes.
And do you have any idea what kind of field is that? Or it's not part of the standard model, right?
No. So for instance, I'll show you some examples, but for instance, you can do that, you could do that with color breaking minima in the MSSM. You could have these warp directions, for instance. And you have more than one field in this case. You have at least six fields, but you can imagine doing it. In this case, it's just some toy extra field.
In the 80s, come up with a...
Sorry?
Quinn Kaplan have, I think, written a paper in the late 80s which contains such an idea that you would have a scalar, complex scalar charging B, and its dynamics would produce variance in such a way.
There's definitely models like this, but if you can show me a reference where they do this to get baryogenesis, then I am very interested to know. But I have seen these models a lot in the literature. They're out there. Affleck-Dine has similar models. This is what they have. They have a charged scalar field. Their potential is just a little different. So these models are definitely out there, and that's a good thing.
Presumably, it could be electronically charged, right? don't have to.
Can be a what?
Leptonic charge.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. Right, so exactly. So another example I'll show you is you can have the MSSM plus sterile neutrinos. So you have a lepton violating mass term and you get it like that. Yeah. Okay. So very roughly, asymmetry goes as epsilon, this parameter. In general, in any number of dimensions, what you find is the integrated baryon number density will go as the surface area of the bubbles, and the number density is that divided by the volume. So you can kind of see here what I meant when I said that no asymmetry is generated if only a single bubble nucleates, and the asymmetry runs off to infinity, simply because you let L go to infinity, the asymmetry clearly vanishes. Okay, so to make sure we're not crazy, we actually simulated these things. So we took the numerical solutions from the overshoot-undershoot argument, and we used those as initial conditions and evolved two fields approaching each other under the equation's motion. So what you see here is a 3D plot of the baryon number density, so it hasn't been integrated yet. For now, ignore the right-hand side of the plot, that's post-collision dynamics. And what I want you to focus on is just these two spikes, which are the walls. So you can see they start, the bubble nucleates from rest. It starts with zero asymmetry, because theta dot is zero. It quickly expands, so theta dot grows, and at the same time, it's becoming thinner by Lorentz contraction. And so the baryon number density will approach the surface area times some model-dependent number. Okay, so this is the first part of this plot I showed you before. This is the bubble nucleates from zero, and it quickly asymptotes to this constant function. Next, I want to explain the spike, which will be due to collisions. So as I said before, we need percolation. So the bubbles are going to expand approximately to a volume 1 over gamma squared of the decay rate before they collide again. So that means that the length scale is given by gamma, which is e to the minus s, which already looks like kind of a good thing because, remember, we need to accommodate a 10 to the minus 10 asymmetry. So we have an exponentially suppressed number, delta s of, you know, 10 to 50 to 100 turns out to be completely reasonable. And cosmologically speaking, you want to ask when percolation happens, you integrate over the probability that at a certain time that you've nucleated a bubble in the right position in the past to convert your current vacua to true vacua, and that comes out to be roughly just Hubble. So gamma roughly equal to Hubble at percolation gives you this condition. So ultimately, what you're going to solve for is the time of percolation in terms of the Euclidean action and the parameters of the problem. We can solve this numerically. Before doing so, we can actually understand the dynamics of the motion of the moment of collision just by looking at the equations of motion. So by the time collision occurs, the walls are very thin, they're Lorentz contracted, they're moving very fast, and they're going to cross on very short timescales. So in that sense, we can ignore things like Hubble expansion, we can ignore things like the effects of the potential during that moment, and we can just solve the linear wave equation. And what this means is that you would expect baryon number to be roughly conserved as the walls cross each other. So in other words, if you think about what's happening to the field, so the field nucleates, it goes to zero, the walls pass each other, and you simply superimpose them, so the field just gets thrown to the exact opposite side of the potential, so to minus five falls, to minus its initial value, up to a region which is no longer a vacuum state. And you can see this in the simulations. So here, this is a profile of two walls accelerating towards each other post-collision. So the false vacua, so on the outside is the true vacua, the top is the false vacua. At the moment of the collision, what you find is the field is thrown to the opposite side of the potential. So the field completely flips. So it's twice its initial value. After the collision, this linear wave equation is no longer a good approximation. You're at later times, and the field is going to start to evolve under the potential, under the force of the potential, and under Hubble expansion. And it's going to do so in a model, a very model-dependent way. So for instance, one thing it could do is it can start to oscillate about the minimum. Or it's, depending on the potential, it may become trapped in another minima and form pockets of false vacua. So just to emphasize what this means.
Suppose one of the walls was actually a little higher.
Wouldn't
angle momentum drop, the field space angle momentum conservation forbid this sort of picture?
One of the walls were a little higher. I guess I don't know what you mean by that, because I'm imagining I'm just tunneling from I'm tunneling from the same vacua. I'm just tunneling from one vacua to the other, so I'm nucleating bubbles with light.
There's only one vacua.
Yeah, I mean you can certainly do a much more complicated problem where you have different vacuas, but this is like first order, zeroth order approximation.
But doesn't the wall size change as it expands? So you also have to have the same radius for it to be equally high. Because as it's expanding, you would expect the amount of energy in the wall to keep the same, right? So the wall itself to become smaller because you have
The wall will become thinner.
Thinner?
Yes. Yes.
So the walls that collide with each other don't have to be the same, right?
That's just the slope, right?
Right. So,
yeah.
But so it doesn't have to be a symmetric picture.
Oh, you're just saying it's not exactly symmetric.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean. Yeah. This size is what's going
yeah,
to
change. And there's always a frame where they nucleate at the same time, right? There's always a frame where they nucleate at the same time, and I guess
mm-hmm.
the figure you're showing
mm-hmm.
where it looks symmetric is in that frame.
Yes. Yeah. You're imagining you're nucleating the bubbles the same distance apart. Not sure if that answered the question. Okay. So just to see this more clearly, I just plotted a 3D plot of the real part of phi. So again, this is the bubble wall. This spike here is the moment of the collision. And then all this oscillation is from the evolution after the collision. So the thing here is, after the collision, you're no longer in a vacuum state, and you're moving, again, through a region that has these B and CP violating terms. So you're going to generate a second wave of Baryon asymmetry, and it's going to look like a localized Affleck-Dyne mechanism. So Affleck-Dyne localized at the collision site. So we know how to approximate that. We know what the Baryon asymmetry from Affleck-Dyne is. The localized Affleck-Dyne is just going to be normalized to the volume over which the condensate is active. So roughly speaking, if it takes the field some time, some characteristic time, 1 over m, to roll back down, to initially roll back down from where it was thrown to the origin, that's going to be the spatial width of the condensate. And just a very rough calculation tells you that you will expect the Baryon asymmetry generated by the collision to be of the same order of magnitude as the Baryon asymmetry generated by the instanton itself. So you can see that here, this is back to this plot of Baryon number density, and you can see this spike up here, that is from the localized Affleck-Dyne mechanism, and it's within the same order of magnitude as the asymmetry from the walls. Here what you can see, these are the walls approximately passing through each other. And finally, all this stuff is what's going on as the boosted walls broaden, dissolve, they don't solve the equations of motion anymore. So there's two things to note about this regime. First of all, the quanta are now becoming soft. They're no longer in the walls, and so that means that they can decay. So earlier you could have wondered, I need my phi field eventually to decay, but it's contained in these boosted walls. They're never going to decay. So the collision actually allows the decay, the quanta to become soft and makes decay possible. So that's another reason for needing collision. And finally, you will wonder, now that I'm evolving under the possible equations of motion, will my BNCP violating terms wash out the asymmetry that I generated? So I need to study washout. So washout is a very model-dependent effect. In general, if you have higher dimensional operators, you're not going to worry so much about them simply because they're active at larger field values, and we have things like Hubble expansion, which is going to damp our field to the origin. So if I just think of kind of the worst case scenario where I have, for instance, I add epsilon times something that looks like a mass term, and I ask, what does this do to the asymmetry? Well, what this does is it just splits the mass eigenstates, and the asymmetry will just precess about the initial value without losing any baryon asymmetry. So what that means is you want, if you want to not have to worry about washout at all, you want your decays to be pretty fast. You want to decay very shortly after the moment of collision, very shortly right after the quanta becomes soft. And this, in principle, is not hard to do. You just imagine some higher dimensional operator. M is effectively a free parameter, and it turns out that it's very easy to get this to correspond to a decay rate, which is about equal to Hubble interpolation. Of course, even if you don't have this case, you're still not going to, you know, damp out the asymmetry. It's just going to become unpredictable because it's oscillating about the origin. Okay, so let me go over a very simple toy model. So just again, to summarize the criteria, I want percolation. I want the parameters of the theory to accommodate the observed asymmetry. I want perturbativity. I want whatever model. I want to make sure that the effective couplings don't blow up. And finally, classical and thermal washout must be under control. Okay, so let me continue to treat, for simplicity, I'll continue to treat the asymmetry as a perturbation. So I'll have a symmetric potential that depends only on R, and a B and CP violating potential that will carry the theta dependence. So let me just choose the simplest potential, one of the simplest potentials that I could choose, which will have a mass term, a cubic, and a quartic for my B and CP symmetric part. And I want this to have some time-varying behavior. So I can do, similarly to what's done in Affleck-Dyne, I can just couple this field to the inflaton. So for instance, in a SUSY model, you could have a term like this in your Kaylor potential, which when the inflaton gets a BEV, just gives you a Hubble-dependent contribution to your mass term, right? So I'll make my mass term time-varying. In principle, every other coupling will have Hubble-induced terms that you can't forbid. But again, for simplicity, let me just focus on the case where I've induced this mass term to the coupling. So the potential is going to have the following cosmological history. So at early times, M is going to be small, and the quantity A over M lambda, which turns out to control the history, is going to be large. So true minima will be baryon number violating. As time goes on, the minima will be lifted. Eventually, the true minima will become degenerate at some point. This is corresponding to be close to the thin wall limit. And you enter a percolating regime. And some later time afterwards, you lose your first order phase transition. So percolation must occur within these values of the theory parameter. So before continuing, now that I've written down an actual toy model, I could do a numerical check. So I've made a claim before that the asymmetry goes as mu squared, which is the same as epsilon times the value of the false vacuum. So I can now compute what mu squared is given some choice of potential and compare it to epsilon. And just as an example of that, you can see that they'll be of the same order of magnitude as each other. So this is epsilon versus mu squared over epsilon RF, roughly of the same order. Here epsilon is small, that's just the numerics having trouble solving for the instanton profiles. So that means that for now I can still remain agnostic about my choice of B and CP violating parameters. And I just want to emphasize that we're going to imagine that B violation is sourced by the inflaton alone, so that the B violating operator is shut off after inflation, and so we don't have to worry about thermal washout. And finally, you need at least two B violating operators so you don't remove your CP phase away by field redefinition. Okay, so let me compute the asymmetry. I can do that by solving for when percolation happens, so solving for approximately when the nucleation rate becomes equal to Hubble, where this M star is now the Hubble-dependent term, which has the soft mass contribution plus the Kaylor term. And you can solve for S star just by plugging that into your numerics. And what you find is, if you plot it, is something like this. So for small values of A over M lambda, this corresponds to the phase transition becoming second order, right? So S is going to zero. And as you increase that, percolation happens. So the action is going to be roughly 10 to 100. Great, that's exactly what we need. And then as you make it even bigger, the action goes to infinity because the minima are becoming degenerate. And so that's the red curve, that's the blue curve. The dotted red curve is just the Pullman's thin wall limit for comparison. So here they start approaching each other before things diverge. Okay, so now that I found what the action is, I can solve for when percolation occurs and just calculate the expected asymmetry. So the asymmetry is going to dilute because reheating occurs after percolation, and it's going to depend on the reheating temperature because of that. So here again, H star is just plugging in what the theory parameters are of percolation. HR and SR just go as T to the fourth over T cubed, and we have fixed 10 to the minus 10 for the asymmetry. So that what that means is for a given point parameter space requiring the asymmetry to reproduce the observed value fixes the reheat temperature. So here's a sample parameter space. The gray contours are the Euclidean action. The red contours are the value of the reheat temperature. And this region here to the right is the allowed region because that's the region where our reheating occurs after percolation. So in other words, the energy density of the in-Sultana reheating is less than what it should be at percolation, and this translates into a bound on this M tilde, or the soft mass. Okay. So as I said before, we want the asymmetry yield to persist, and we want it to be transferred to the standard model. So we can do that through decays. So for instance, through UDD with phi decaying to three quarks. As I said before, M is essentially a free parameter. And the percolation rate can easily be made to be much higher than Hubble, so that the field within each nucleated bubble decays very, very fast after nucleation, and classical washout is minimized. And of course, you can imagine converting the asymmetry into a lepton asymmetry through similar operators, or into a dark matter asymmetry, if you will. Okay, so as an example of a more realistic model, you can imagine the MSSM plus sterile neutrinos. So you have your sterile neutrino mass and LHN operator, so you have lepton violating interactions. You have the usual F and D terms. They have cubic terms, quartic terms, so it's looking a lot like the Twent model. And you have your soft Suzy breaking terms. And all these terms can receive Hubble-induced couplings from the inflaton just the same as the mass term in the Twent model. And you know, you can arrange these couplings with playing with the symmetries. You can arrange them to give the time evolution that you desire. So you can see that you have all the necessary ingredients. You have L violation, you're going to have CP violating phases, and you can have your cubic terms, and you can, for instance, make the cubic terms large in the early universe to result in global minima that are L violating. However, this is already a multi-dimensional model. It's going to have many different instanton profiles, and as I said before, the way we were solving this, we have difficulty solving more than two fields. So for now, we deferred this to future work. Okay. So kind of the nice thing about this mechanism of baryogenesis is that because we have bubble collisions, this opens up a whole variety of possible signals. So for instance, there's a bunch of literature on gravity waves produced through bubble collisions. So everything in that literature should apply to us. For us, the bubbles are roughly the same size. They're colliding roughly at a distance gamma. So you would expect to see a spectrum with a sharp spike at H star. Still going to be difficult to actually see it because most of the energy density is still from the inflaton. So I'm not claiming that this is a smoking gun signal, but it's still good for barogenesis. Another possible, well, another effect of the bubble collisions is that they produce these non-topological solitons. So there's some hybrid between cue balls and oscillons, and what they are is they're, they do elliptical oscillations about the potential, and depending on what your model is, they may or may not be stable. So there might be some kind of, you might hope to see some kind of signal of that, or to use them, you know, to explain something else. But again, that's a model-dependent effect. Okay. So some future directions. Obviously, we need to work out the details of more realistic models, so the multi-field models. We need to look at what happens when we have bubble barogenesis after reheating. So thermal effects from Big Bang plasma will generate this potential. And we need to understand specifically how to deal with thermal washout in this context. Another kind of amusing future direction is, so there was a recent proposal, Adam Brown had this paper where he nucleated these bubbles in an extra dimension. He was doing it for inflation, but we can imagine doing bubble barogenesis like this. We can have a single bubble that's wrapping around this extra dimension and collides with itself, which is kind of a neat thing to do in and of itself. But what this means is that the Baron asymmetry is now going to be dictated by the geometry. It's going to be dictated by the size of the extra dimension. And finally, of course, you can imagine doing asymmetric dark matter just by transferring the asymmetry to dark asymmetry. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, so in your case, you have a, you have a very phenomenological model of reheating, right? So so in particular, you have a certain self-interacting scalar field, and that field, of course, will decay by a kind of resonance phenomenon that will contribute to preheating. And you will have a competing effects, namely the effect of converting your scalar charge into baryon number that is, let's say, goes via the phalerons, which become in equilibrium, if I remember correct, around 10 to 12 GeV temperature. And the one that comes from scalar field decay, which will tend to wash out the asymmetry you created. Have you taken into account that contributes to your washout?
So phalerons will contribute to our washout. And
well,
that's the same as synaffleck dyne. I mean,
No, that's not what I meant. Phalerons will, I mean, if you generate an initial B, roughly speaking, phalerons will distribute it between B and L evenly. And what I mean is you have you checked that, you know, you have certain criterion for what sort of washout you need in order to reach you observed baryon number, but that was based upon just simply without doing any calculation. But in fact, in your model, you do have a self-interaction which will give you certain well-defined time scale for preheating, for the field decay, and that's actually not in conflict with your estimate of washout.
I mean, the decay of the field is set by a new free parameter. It's whatever scale you coupled your inflaton to your standard model particles with.
But I thought that you calculate under, you know, you calculate the symmetry by assuming certain parameters in the model, right?
Yes.
And for the given parameters, you can estimate the scale at which, I mean, the time scale at which the field decay.
So the asymmetry that I'm showing here is just by coupling the just comes from coupling the scalar baryon to the inflaton. It's not actually coupling to the standard model particles in the toy model.
It has its own self-interaction, which will, as it equilibrates through self-interaction, will simply wash out completely any kind of
scalar
charge
generated. But it's not in thermal equilibrium. So why would it equilibrate?
Well, but it will equilibrate eventually. I mean,
I mean, but you're turning off these after the inflaton decays. You're turning off the interactions which violate B and CP. So those interactions.
I'm just talking about those interactions that cause equilibration in the scalar field that produces B.
I mean, I'm just imagining that it decays to some fields. That's not going to equal. I mean, if you decay, I mean, that's not going to equal. I mean, eventually it can equilibrate you, but if you just have a decay, I mean, that's like having.
You assume that the decay rate is a free parameter. What I'm saying
yes.
is it's not completely free.
Okay. I mean,
there is also decay of induced by the parameters in the model that you assume in the first place.
Sure. I'm assuming that.
So you have to check that your assumption about what is the entropy production through preheating is consistent with
yes.
the parameters of the model.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm assuming that the decay rate is not sufficient to create the abundance fast enough to equilibrate you with whatever thermal bath you have lying around.
Yeah, but this is an assumption that needs to be checked.
It does need to be checked, but we also need to have a real model.
No, but as soon as you write down a potential, you
yes.
already have parameters and you can calculate.
Yeah.
You calculate equilibration rate. I mean, it's not something that, you know, it's not something that depends on the model you haven't specified. It's already
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very
yeah.
simple point. I mean,
yeah. No,
it just needs to be checked.
Yeah.
Have you thought of generalizing this idea a little bit to this spontaneous paragenesis? All the
literature
back in the 80s and so on.
No, I don't think so.
If you have a baryon current coupled to the derivative of the scalar field somehow,
mm-hmm.
right? If the scalar field derivative develops the left, then you have a chemical potential for the baryon current
mm-hmm.
and the presence of smothers that shifts the balance, right? So you could. Use your directional kind of evolution of
mm-hmm.
the scale of field in the nucleation and drive the baryogenesis this way.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, you would not need to have your scalars charged either under the baryon number
mm-hmm.
or level
mm-hmm.
number. They could be
yeah.
neutral under both symmetries, but they could nevertheless.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's been such an extensive literature of
yeah.
paragenesis that you can sort of go back and see which
you can do.
All,
yeah, yeah,
can,
no, no, and we did.
Can,
we started to do that, and
you know, your ideas, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, we would still be working. You know, this would not be out yet if we continued to do that. But we, I mean, definitely, this can be generalized to so many things.
Yeah. There is maybe another comment that is I didn't quite understand why your statement that when you have a bubble colliding,
mm-hmm.
that you double baryon number. I mean, if you have a net baryon, or let's say net scalar charge in both bubbles, so it's roughly equal,
mm-hmm.
after collision, won't you just get average?
I mean, your field is, it's been thrown back up the potential. So it's going to have motion in the potential.
Uh-huh. So
which is
an additional dynamics that
yeah.
is sticky about it.
Yes.
Collision.
Yeah, it's like having Affleck dying after the bubble collision.
Uh-huh.
It's rolling back through the potential.
Well, as far as I know, nobody has considered this possibility in L3 baryogenesis, but there most of the time you have the speeds are subluminal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are slower than the speed of sound.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody has considered that possibility that you would generate additional baryon number by a bubble collision.
I'm not sure you could, because there, again, the bubbles just give you the CP phases. I mean, you don't actually.
Yeah, but that's exactly what each individual bubble does. I mean, if you're telling me that there is an additional CP violating dynamics going on after collisions,
mm-hmm.
that could also happen at the other 2 weeks scale, right?
I mean, it's not like additional CP violating dynamics. It's the same terms in the potential. It's from the fact that the field is the scalar field is
it's
evolving.
It's the same
term,
but it's additional dynamics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So maybe I'm
yeah.
not sure it would work for a week.
So switching gears radically, this these non-topological solitons that you mentioned.
Yes.
You were. So what kinds of consequences would they have?
So the cheat answer is everything Affleck Dine did apply to us. So for instance, they could be stable, and they change their effect to the asymmetry is kind of like wash out and makes it oscillate about the minimum. So you know, they might be around, you might be able to see them. Some people, you know, I know somebody working on trying to have dark matter come out of bubble collisions and through these kind of non-topological defects, for instance, if they're stable.
Okay, well, that's the speaker again.